It's not often that we get such a hard stop in our lives from our normal routines. In fact, it's quite unprecedented. And I'm sure each of us, just as we are unique individuals, have a unique tale to tell on how we've each been affected. Personally, I was sent home from work this week. So I was home the whole week. Due to the industry that I work in and its connection to the food chain, we will keep working. But our management decided that if everybody's at work and someone comes to work infected, everybody goes home quarantined. And that would stop everything. And so they've sent two-thirds of us home with the idea, and this is a slow time of year, so it works. You know, we're not out in the field, and there's not a lot going on in our industry right now. So that if someone who is at work, keeping the lights on, keeping the grain moving, gets sick and has to go home and quarantine, there's a fresh set of people on the bench that can go in. So that's the side that I'm on. So I found myself at home all week. And as most of you have been, we've been told not to do a lot of things. We've been prohibited from doing a lot of things. And it's caused time for each of us to reflect, I'm sure. Caused each of us to pause. Leanne and I have tried to do that at various times throughout our lives. We often joke that we've dedicated our whole lives to raising kids. We were raising little kids 20 years ago, and we're still raising young children today. And there never seems to be enough time. Those of you that are parents know that when children are small, they require a lot of direct attention. We're still giving that direct attention. And it seems like at times over the years, we've found about once every 5 years, which doesn't seem like that much, we've been able to peel away just the two of us and go somewhere and just reflect. And those trips that we've taken, we don't do a lot. They're not filled with activities. We actually spend time going through each of our children, thinking, what do I need to be doing for this child as a parent? What do they need? Where are they at? And we do that in our own lives as well, and do a lot of spiritual reflection. So that's about every 5 years. Well, all of a sudden, I find myself in a similar situation. But it's even a little more unique, because those are brief lapses that we have when the world continues, and now the world has just almost come to a full stop. And that's not completely true, but it's in a lot of ways it is. I was trying to put my words together here. The elders in the letter that they gave us last week mentioned Ecclesiastes 3:5. Well, I wanted to read that verse in its context, so I go ahead and turn over to Ecclesiastes. That's going to be the text of our lesson this morning. I went ahead and turned over to Ecclesiastes 3:5, where it talks about there's a time for embracing and there's a time to not embrace. And I wanted to read that in its context, and Ecclesiastes really just became interesting to me. And I read it a few times this week, and I thought, you know what, that's pretty applicable to what we're all going through right now. And so the book of Ecclesiastes is what I want to focus on this morning, about finding joy in life. And as you know, Solomon, who most people agree is the writer of that book, talks about it, describes it as the vanity of life. How life is just really vain in itself. And that's the theme of the book. And it's really a beautifully written book. The first chapter talks a lot about why he's asking these questions, especially in verses 5 through verses 11. He talks about the permanence of God and of God's creation. And as a finite man, we can look around and see, and he says it there, that the earth continues on forever, and yet man and his influence and his effect on this world lasts just a little bit of time. And as humans, we can recognize that the mountains and the rivers and the oceans, they continue past the generations, and yet the mark that we as humans try to leave on this earth is almost like an erasable pencil, isn't it? It just, we can't change this creation that God has made. And so it makes you wonder what our place in all of that is. And that's by design. He talks about that in the third chapter, that God put eternity in our hearts. He says that in the third chapter. And part of the way that He does that is by the unchanging nature of Him and of His creation. We realize that we're small. We realize that there was a designer. And we realize that there was much more to life than what we can do, than what we can accomplish, than what we can try to find out. It really is an intriguing book. And in Solomon's search for the meaning of life under the sun, he uses that phrase under the sun some 29 times. And his conclusion that it's the vanity of life, is used some 35 times. He describes many different things throughout the book. And we're going to turn to many different verses, hopefully it won't take too long, to kind of look at what Solomon searched for and what he decided and what he found. But don't be too saddened, don't be too depressed. Despite the fact that life under the sun results in vanity, he also uses the terms joy, enjoy, enjoyment, and rejoice many times as well. I think in the book, Solomon provides us counsel on how to get the most out of life. And that's one thing that struck me this week, is something that I spend, unfortunately, a majority of my waking hours doing, and that's working, was taken out of my daily routine. And so I had to readjust. And I had to try to figure out what is life going to be like this week, perhaps next week, and whatever, however long this goes on. But hopefully just taking stock of what life should mean to all of us and where we fit in with the Creator. Let's turn to Ecclesiastes, the second chapter, and start there. Solomon's going to tell us how to get the most out of this life. And this book, this inspired book, is completely consistent with the New Testament. And we'll turn over there to make some application at the end of our lesson. But in Ecclesiastes, the second chapter, starting in verse 22, he says, "For what does a man get in all his labor and in his striving with which he labors under the sun? Because all his days his task is painful and grievous. Even at night his mind does not rest. This too is vanity. There is nothing better for a man than to eat and drink and tell himself that his labor is good. This also I have seen, that it is from the hand of God." There is a way to find joy in this life, and it's not by thinking that we can change the world, that we can somehow change what God created and make a lasting mark for the generations past us, because we can't. Because we can't. All we can do is live our lives in a fashion that is pleasing before our God and have an effect on those around us as we journey through this life. The purpose of life is not to change the world, to leave a lasting mark. It's to be pleasing to our God, and it's to have an effect on the salvation, hopefully, of those around us. The vanity of life, that phrase that he uses over and over. Solomon talks about some of the things that he sought with his vast resources and with the wisdom that God granted him. He sought to see, well, what if I seek pleasure? Will that bring me fulfillment? What if I am very industrious and I can build cities and I can build lakes that irrigate whole forests of trees to grow? All this industry that he was able to put together, would that bring him fulfillment? What about wisdom itself? He was a wise man. He sought for more wisdom. But we all know the answer to all of those things, and none of those brought Solomon fulfillment. In the second chapter, we're just going to read a few verses where he draws these conclusions. These are his experiences. Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 1, "I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure. So enjoy yourself, and behold, it too was futility," or vanity. We all know people in our culture, a very wealthy culture with the highest standard of living in the world, perhaps ever in the world. We all know a lot of people that seek for nothing more than pleasure, don't we? That's what they work for. That's what they strive for, is to entertain themselves, to try to have a life of ease and fun and entertainment. And Solomon says that the end of that is futility. He was able to pursue that as well, but that didn't bring meaning to his life. In the second chapter, still in that same chapter, verse 11, he sought to labor and to build things, to leave a mark by what he was able to accomplish. And in the 11th verse, he says, "Thus I considered all my activities which my hands had done and the labor which I had exerted. And behold, all was vanity and striving after wind, and there was no profit under the sun." We all spend our lives working, perhaps a majority of our working hours throughout our working years in our lives. And is that the culmination of our existence? Solomon says no. That everything he was able to accomplish, the great works that he was able to do, that all of that was vanity. There was no profit under the sun. That one hit me between the eyes this week because I work hard. And when it's and what's the purpose? It provides money, it provides support, hopefully for my family, to allow me to, and that's where the important part comes in, to serve my God and to affect others. It's not just the fact that I can have a position in my working life or that I can accomplish anything. All that is futility and striving after the wind. Back in the first chapter, in verse 17, he talks about that strive for wisdom. 1 and verse 17, "And I set my mind to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I realized that this also is striving after wind." Ecclesiastes, the second chapter, we're kind of flopping around, but over that next chapter, verse 17 again, he says, "So I hated life, for the work which had been done under the sun was grievous to me, because everything is futility and striving after wind." That's kind of a culmination. When he says life, he means everything I tried. Everything I tried was vanity. There was nothing that was going to be lastingly fulfilling to me in my soul, and certainly not in eternity. And finally, in Ecclesiastes, the second chapter, there again, starting in verse 18, he talks about what he could leave for those that come after him. And some of us think about that as well. "Thus I hated all the fruit of my labor for which I had labored under the sun, for I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool, yet he will have control over all the fruit of my labor for which I have labored by acting wisely under the sun. This too is vanity. Therefore, I completely despaired of all the fruit of my labor for which I had labored under the sun. When there is a man who has labored with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, then he gives his legacy to one who has not labored with him. This too is vanity and a great evil." So even when we can accumulate a lot and try to leave it for those that come after that, he's talking about the next king who should be his son. And even that is futility because he didn't know if his son would be wise, someone he knows very well, someone that he loves, someone that he has a hand in seeing what he becomes, trying to instill wisdom in that child. But even that is futility. That was Solomon's experience. And he mentioned some other. We could have come up with some other topics there, but those are the ones I wanted to bring out to you this morning. He sought after those things, but he also, with his knowledge, observed many other things. Some of those were the vanity of this very earthly existence. Turn with me to the third chapter. Vanity of our earthly existence. The third chapter in verse 19, he says, "For the fate of the sons of men and the fate of beasts is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. Indeed, they all have the same breath, and there is no advantage for man over beast, for all is vanity. All go to the same place. All came from the dust, and all return to the dust. Who knows that the breath of man ascends upward, and the breath of the beast descends downward to the earth? I have seen that nothing is better than that man should be happy in his activities, for that is his lot. For who will bring him to see what will occur after him?" We don't know what's going to happen when we're gone. And our fate is just like the animal's fate. Our favorite pet or the animals of the field, we're all going to die. None of us are going to be able to survive through the eons, through the time. And he already mentions the creation in the first chapter, that it just goes on in perpetuity. And none of us are going to be able to stick around for that. No one of us are going to be able to to see what's going to happen down through the generations, down through the time. The very fact that our life is finite, that we're going to die just like everything else dies, that our bodies are going to return to dust like everything else is going to return to dust, means that we really need to take stock and look somewhere else. That's where he's going to point us. And we need to look to our souls. We need to look to eternity. And that's where he's going to end up, as we all know. Ecclesiastes, the fourth chapter, another thing that he observed. Ecclesiastes 4, 7, and 8, he says, "Then I looked again at vanity under the sun. There was a certain man without a dependent," or a second, some versions say, "having neither son nor brother, yet there was no end to all his labor. Indeed, his eyes were not satisfied with riches, and he never asked, 'And for whom am I laboring and depriving myself of pleasure? This too is vanity and is a grievous task.'" He's talking here about people that choose to require riches when they don't even have a family to take care of, to provide for, or to leave it to. Seeking pleasure, there's no fulfillment in that. There's no lasting value in that before our God. And labor by itself is the same result. Labor and riches in and of themselves have no lasting value to our souls and to our status before our God. So that person ends up with nothing and is living a life of vanity. Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 10 talks about loving wealth and loving abundance. And if I had to pick a second thing that Americans are really good at, it's loving abundance. "He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with its income. This too is vanity." You know, we give lip service to this a lot, and I'll call it lip service because even for myself, we are a product of our society, whether we know it or not. And if you've ever journeyed outside of this country, you realize that other people in this world today live at a very different standard of living than we do. We don't even realize how much we have. We don't even realize the luxuries that we have. But those things are empty. And seeking money and seeking abundance, they'll never be enough. We'll never be satisfied. And striving after those things is vanity. Ecclesiastes chapter 7 and verse 6, another thing that Solomon noted, that he observed. He says, "For as the crackling of thorn bushes under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. And this too is futility." That one's got a little bit of humor in it, I think. If you've ever tried to light a fire to actually heat something, you don't use thorn bushes. They don't provide enough heat. There's moisture, I think, is what he's talking about there in those, in that they crackle. They make a noise. They may throw sparks, but they don't really accomplish anything. "And so is the laughter of the fool." This too is utility. Someone who just is maybe the class clown throughout their whole life, that they're just seeking to be happy, to find the lighter side and the humor in life. We probably all know people that didn't take life quite seriously enough. I think that's who he's talking about here. And so some people, there's all ends of the spectrum. Some people, with their nose to the grindstone, labor their lives away, and if that's all they are, it's vain. There's other people, and the Bible talks in other places about the sluggard and about the person that won't work, perhaps the fool, as he talks here. That man's no better off either, because that's vanity as well. All this is vanity. We see this. We know this. But these are good reminders in these uncertain times. In Ecclesiastes, the 8th chapter, still verse 14, he talks about the lack of justice in this world. And we can all look around and see that. He says in verse 14, "There is futility which is done on the earth. That is, there are righteous men to whom it happens according to the deeds of the wicked. On the other hand, there are evil men to whom it happens according to the deeds of the righteous. I say that this too is futility." We know that there is not justice in this world. And I've said it before, and I'll continue to say it, that I am glad that God is my judge. Because there is not justice in this world. Just because you live a good life doesn't mean that good things will always happen to you. And it seems that the wicked who live a wicked life seems like the good things do happen to them so many times. That there's injustice in the world. And we can't count on justice being meted out in the minds and the actions of men. And so that too is vanity. The last one I want to talk about is Ecclesiastes, the 11th chapter and the 10th verse, where he talks about childhood and youth. People often try to hold on to youth, and they try to resist growing old for various different reasons. In the 11th chapter and the 10th verse, he says, "So remove grief and anger from your heart and put away pain from your body, because childhood and the prime of life are fleeting." They are. We cannot hold on to our youth. We cannot stay in our 20s or in our teens. It just won't happen. I still subscribe to a newspaper, which most people don't, but it's the Wall Street Journal. I do that for work. And that's pretty dry, right? It's all about the business world. But once a week, on Fridays, they put in a lifestyle section. It's the only time of the week they ever do that. And Saturday's a little bit lighter. They publish 6 days a week. But they had one, and I don't know if he saw it, but Ben looked at it yesterday before we wadded it up and threw it in the fire to burn it. It was about celebrities turning 50. And they had a bunch of people from the 19th century who were celebrities, and they showed them in their 50s, and they looked pretty aged. They were showing the marks of age, let's put it that way. And then they showed a bunch of celebrities this year that were in their 50s, and they looked younger. And that I didn't stop to read the article, I didn't care. But the gist of it is people are staying younger longer, and this is how they're doing it, and this is what they're doing to enjoy their life and to look the way they look. It was very vain to look the way they look. They were deriding the way people looked back then in their 50s, and now you don't have to look that way. You can stay younger. We're not going to retain our youth. We all know that. And so trying to do that, trying to live that way is vain, because we can't hold on to that. No matter how hard we try, we are going to age. We are going to get aches and pains. Our body's going to decay, but our inner man can be renewed day by day. And that's the encouraging part of that. But it's vain to try to hold on to childhood and youth. You can't do it. No one can do it. And so don't spend your time and your effort doing that. So what is the conclusion of all this? Well, Solomon told us the conclusion before he ever started writing most of the book. Back in the first chapter, Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 2, as he introduces the book, in verse 2 he says, "Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities." He repeats it again. All is vanity. And then in the 14th verse of that first chapter, the 14th verse, he says, "I have seen all the works which have been done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and striving after wind." He tells us that before he writes the book, before he writes most of the meat of the book. But that's the result. And then he goes and tells you what he observed, why he observed it, but that's not the end. Many people have came to these same conclusions, that there isn't much meaning to their lives. And I'm not just talking about Christians, I'm talking about people all over the world. And when you don't have faith in God, and you don't have that as your backbone, that realization that life is futile, that life is vain, can lead people to a feeling of despair or a feeling of despondency. And if you're like me, you've known people like that are grasping wildly for these things. I've known people that were grasping wildly to retain their youth, to retain their bodies the way they were perhaps decades ago, to hold on to these things that they can try to make meaning of their lives with. But it's all futile and it's all vain. But that's not the end. God would have us know joy in our lives, true joy, but it's only through Him. And that's Solomon's conclusion. So let's talk about that for just a few moments. There is joy in life. Go to the second chapter of Ecclesiastes and the 10th verse. He says, "All that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart was pleased because of all my labor. And this was my reward for all my labor." For everything that he did, for everything that he tried, for all the avenues that he tested, where did his heart find real pleasure? His heart was pleased because of all my labor. And this was my reward for my labor. The fact that he was pleased in what he was doing, that he found happiness in the work that he did. Well, how could that be? Why would that be? All you have to do is go back to the garden, I think, for that. And for their expulsion from the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve. They were cursed to labor. They were cursed to work the ground. That was their lot in life when they were tossed out of the garden. That's our lot in life. We can't change creation. We can't change the face of the future of mankind. We're just a blip on the screen. We can't even really change the fate of our children. We affect them, but we'll be gone, as a general rule, before they are. And we won't even live to see what they do with what we leave them, as a general statement. And so Solomon, he's going to say it over and over, and we'll see it a couple more times. We are to simply be humble servants of our God. We're to labor as God has set us to do, because that's what he set Adam and Eve to do and all of mankind after that, and to find peace and to find fulfillment in the tasks that our hands find to do. And then the conclusion of the whole thing is to fear God. We'll talk about that in a few moments. But none of these things that he sought, none of these avenues that he pursued brought fulfillment. But joy came in simply living the life that God gave us all to live. If a man will not work, neither let him eat. Labor has been a consistent theme throughout God's creation. And that's what we are to do, is to keep ourselves busy, to keep ourselves busy to provide for ourselves. And we're to enjoy the life that God gives us as we work with our hands. The reward of Solomon's labor was simply the joy in doing it. It's kind of surprising if you think about it. It's not what most people are looking for when they search for those answers. But that's what God says. Let's go to the 24th verse. We read that already. But Solomon observed that nothing is better than to enjoy the simple things in what you do each day. Verse 24. There is nothing better, he says, for a man than to eat and drink and tell himself that his labor is good. That's what we all do each day. We all are called to go and to do some task. We have to eat and drink. That's part of sustaining our lives. And we're to find joy in the simple parts of living that God has structured our lives around. This also I have seen, that it is from the hand of God. This isn't just God made us this way. God ordered our lives this way. This is God's plan. Verse 25, for who can eat and who can have enjoyment without him? That's the other part of the conclusion. Without God, our lives are empty. Without God, our lives are futile. But we need to carry on with our lives and enjoy them, knowing that the blessings come from God and that God is our Creator, that we came from him, that our spirit will return to him. And that should be our focus, and that's where we should find our joy and our fulfillment. Verse 26, for to a person who is good in his sight, he has given wisdom and knowledge and joy. That's what we hope to seek. If we are good in his sight, if we believe in him, if we obey him, he will grant us a portion of wisdom and knowledge and joy that the world doesn't have. The world that's seeking for that meaning of life, they don't have that. But God grants that to us. Let's continue reading. While to the sinner he has given the task of gathering and collecting so that he may give to one who is good in God's sight. This too is vanity and striving after the wind. So what's the sinner's lot in life? It's to the task of gathering and collecting so that he may give to someone else. When he's gone, someone else has everything that he strove for throughout his whole life. They don't have that joy and that peace of knowing that we get to go to heaven and be at home with God. Their lot in life is trying to find whatever comfort they can find in what's in front of them. They collect, they gather, they work, they toil, and it's all for someone else. And they don't have the joy and the peace that God grants to us. Let's go to Ecclesiastes, the third chapter. Ecclesiastes, the 3rd chapter and the 12th verse, he says, I know that there is nothing better for them than to rejoice and to do good in one's lifetime. Verse 13, moreover, that every man who eats and drinks sees good in all his labor. It is the gift of God. Verse 14, I know that everything God does will remain forever. There is nothing to add to it, and there is nothing to take from it. For God has so worked that men should fear him. That's part of the conclusion that he draws. And the verse that I mentioned that kind of sparked my interest in this whole book is right above that. Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 5. There's a time for everything is what that passage is talking about. And he's already talked about the unchanging nature of God's creation. Verse 11 is where he talks about setting eternity in man's heart. And one of the ways that he does that, we just read, is verse 14. Everything that God does will remain forever. He's talking about creation in that context. There's nothing to add to it, and there's nothing to take from it. For God has so worked that men should fear him, that we should seek him, that we should, when he says fear him, we should understand that he is the creator. He is so much higher than us. This world that he has set in motion, we can't stop the world from turning. We can't raise mountains to their heights. We can't knock mountains over. We can chip away at them, but you're not going to knock the Rocky Mountains down. You're not going to do that. And so man realizes how insignificant he is in the face of God. And so with that in mind, we need to get in line and seek our God and follow his will for us. And that's the path that our lives should take. Let's go to Ecclesiastes, the 5th chapter. Ecclesiastes, the 5th chapter and verse 18. Here is what I have seen to be good and fitting, to eat, to drink, and to enjoy oneself in all one's labor in which he toils under the sun during the few years of his life which God has given him, for this is his reward. Furthermore, as for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth, he has also empowered him to eat from them and to receive his reward and rejoice in his labor. This is the gift of God. For he will not often consider the years of his life because God keeps them occupied with the gladness of his heart. God expects us, and he's going to bless some people more than others. If you find yourself blessed with riches, you should enjoy the fruits of those labors. You find yourself blessed with whatever you have, you should enjoy the fruits of those labors. We're not ever going to get to a point, and we can read in the New Testament, someone who thought, I can work hard enough that I can provide for myself and that I can eat, drink, and be merry and never worry about another thing. That's not the way God ordered our lives. God ordered our lives to rely upon him, to put our trust upon him, to give us each day our daily bread. We don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. That's another thing, a phrase that we seem to give lip service to. But who'd have thought a month ago the stock market was at all-time highs? Who'd have thought that millions of Americans would be in a shelter-in-place order today? Don't leave your house. Stop conducting business. Don't go to work. We don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. So who's going to sustain us through all that? God is. God's who's going to sustain us. That's what our faith needs to be in. We can't do it for ourselves. Well, I've got enough saved up, I'll be fine. That's a foolish thought too. Because everything you have saved up could be blown away in a tornado like hit parts of our country just a month ago in a devastating way, but tornadoes were moving through the country again the night before last. Everything you've saved up and stored up could be gone in the blink of an eye. God is the source of our strength. God is the source of our sustenance. God is the source of our eternal salvation. So what is Solomon's conclusion to all of this? Go to chapter 9. Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and verse 7. Go then, eat your bread in happiness and drink your wine with a cheerful heart, for God has already approved your works. Let your clothes be white all the time, and let not oil be lacking on your head. He says, don't be in mourning. That's what he's talking about with the white clothes and the oil. Verse 9, enjoy life with the woman whom you love all the days of your fleeting life, which he has given you under the sun. For this is your reward in life and in your toil in which you have labored under the sun. We need to enjoy the life that God gave us to live, and he has ordered that life. Finally, let's go over to the 11th chapter. As we near the end of the book, the 11th chapter and verse 9, he says, rejoice, young man, during your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant during the days of your young manhood, and follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes. Yet know that God will bring you to judgment for all these things. So remove grief and anger from your heart and put away pain from your body, because childhood and the prime of life are fleeting. We read that verse a moment ago. He's encouraging the young people to rejoice during their youth, but to remember and be wise in that enjoyment. Do it in a holy way. Do it in a way that's pleasing before God, because he will call all things to judgment. I think another observation we should make from this book of Ecclesiastes is it's largely written from a practical point of view, a worldly point of view. And what I mean by worldly is he's not talking a lot about the spiritual side of man yet. That's what the conclusion is going to be. The conclusion is to fear God and keep his commandments. But all these things that Solomon pursued, that's wisdom that everyone that breathes on the face of the earth can see and understand what he pursued and what his conclusions were. All that is meant to direct us to God, to seek God. This is a book of practical wisdom in how to live our everyday lives. It's not how to be completely acceptable before our God. We're going to find that in the era that we live in the New Testament, in Christ's words, and in the law that he left us. But this is a book of practical wisdom that we should all be able to see the futility of life under the sun and the vanity of the things that man can pursue at the various stages of life and the various times and periods of life that he finds himself in. So while it is a general book about the manner that we live our life, the conclusion is in chapter 12 and verse 1, where he says, remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near, when you will say, I have no delight in them. We need to start to remember our Creator when we're young, because when we're old, we can become distracted and we can not see the wisdom in God's truths with years and a lifetime of prejudice behind us that perhaps we can see when we're young. And that's what he's talking about there. We can reach a point where if we don't remember our Creator in the days of our youth, we'll be old, we'll find ourselves aged, and decide that we don't have delight in those things. We can become jaded, our heart can become darkened, and we don't want to let that happen. And finally, in the 12th chapter, verses 13 and 14, he says, the conclusion, when all has been heard, is, fear God and keep his commandments, because this applies to every person. I prefer the New King James, for this is the whole duty of man, is the way that's rendered. Verse 14, for God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or whether it is evil. Those were the words of Solomon. That's the wisdom that he left us. And I mentioned, and if you would turn over to Philippians, the 4th chapter, and we'll conclude our lesson very quickly here. I mentioned that book is completely consistent with God's message for us throughout all of time, throughout all of his word, throughout the whole Bible. In Philippians, the 4th chapter and verse 4, he says, rejoice in the Lord always, and again I will say rejoice. So just as the book of Ecclesiastes has a lot of futility and a lot of vanity mentioned, he talks about joy, he talks about happiness and where to find that. And as Christians, we're told in the New Testament to rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say rejoice. So when the world's turned upside down, when the world has hit a hard stop, we should rejoice in the right things. We should rejoice in our God. I was texting a friend of mine in Texas yesterday just to wish him happy birthday. And he asked me how things were going for us. And I told him that I was home this week, but that it had been a true blessing. I'd had more time with my children. I'd had more time to study God's Word. And things were looking up. I mean, I'm in a better frame of mind now than I was a month ago because I'm concentrating more on the right things. So rejoice is what Paul says to the Philippians there. Find a way to rejoice during these times. Find a way to concentrate on what really matters because we're so distracted by the things that don't matter so much of the time. We're pursuing those futile things a lot. We're working a lot. We all recreate in some form or fashion. And all those things take time. They take time away from what really matters. And that's serving God. And inspiring those around us to serve God. And taking the word to lost souls. We can be busy doing that right now. When perhaps some of our other obligations aren't requiring so much of us during this time. In Philippians the third chapter, one chapter back. Very quickly, verse 7. For whatever things were gained to me, those things I have counted as loss for the sake of Christ. Think about what you strive for. Think about what the world strives for. Think about what Paul strove for before he knew Christ. More than that, I count all things to be loss in view of the surpassing value of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things, and count them but rubbish so that I may gain Christ and may be found in Him, not having a righteousness of my own derived from the law, but that which is through faith in Christ, the righteousness which comes from God on the basis of faith, that I may know Him and the power of His resurrection and the fellowship of His sufferings, being conformed to His death, in order that I may attain to the resurrection from the dead. When Solomon so long ago says to remember God, and to keep fear God and keep His commandments, and to remember that from our youth up. That's how we do this today. We have the full revelation of God's plan to save mankind before us. And what we need to do is forsake everything else in the pursuit of knowing our Savior, of knowing Jesus Christ, and counting everything else but rubbish, everything else that we pursue, everything else that we spend so much time doing. We have to put it in its proper place. We have to realize that we work as a means to an end. And that end is so that we can live, so that we can physically live, find joy in that daily life, and we can live another day to seek God, to seek to know Christ. What does it mean to know Christ? Two more passages and the lesson will be yours. John 14 and verse 15, a very short passage, but Jesus says, "If you love me, you will keep my commandments." We're going to come to know Jesus. That should be what we strive for more than anything else in our lives. What does it mean to know Jesus? If we come to know Him and love Him, we will keep His commandments. We'll do what He says to do. We'll follow the pattern that He left us in the New Testament. And then the why. Why do we do that? And two chapters back there, if you're still in John the 12th chapter and the 48th verse. Very important passage. He says, this is Jesus talking, "He who rejects me and does not receive my sayings has one who judges him. The word I spoke is what will judge him at the last day." Solomon talked about everything being called a judgment, every deed, good and bad. And I'm always amazed when we see implications of eternity in the Old Testament, because the Old Testament doesn't talk about heaven. The Old Testament doesn't talk about judgment very much, but they knew about it. It was in their consciousness. It was revealed by God in some form or fashion because they knew it, and they talked about it. And Solomon talked about every deed. Solomon knew every deed was going to be called to judgment, good or bad. And Jesus gives us that promise as well. So let's put everything else aside. Perhaps it's a little bit easier to take stock at this time of what's really important in your life, about what you're really striving for. And let's think about back to the wisdom of Solomon. So much of it is vanity. So much of it is futile. And there's some very important things that we can all be pushing towards, that we can all be striving for. If there's anything that we can do for you this morning, please make that known to us as we stand and as we sing.